Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
The key lesson for the talk is as follows. The true test of our actual level of understanding is how we respond to those moments in life when we don't understand why life unfolds as it does. What on earth does that mean? That our true level of understanding is determined by the way in which we respond to each other and to conditions that confront us when we don't understand why that person or those conditions have confronted us. That's the true level of our understanding, is how we meet those moments. Because all of us are great backseat drivers. You know what a backseat driver is. It's someone who knows how the person in the front seat is supposed to be doing it. Isn't there something inside of you that after the collision takes place, after the argument, after the fight, the pain, the waste, that can say, "You fool, why didn't you go right? Why'd you go left?" And you know in that moment that you understand why you didn't behave properly. You understand why you could have been different and should have been. And you will punish yourselves, showing your great wisdom to yourself. Yes or no? Well, that's not wisdom, is it? I always like to say, if the fellow who calls me stupid is so smart, why wasn't he there before he had to call me stupid? Do you ever call yourself stupid? Oh, stupid, you stupid, stupid, stupid. And you, who are you talking to? I believe that the me who calls me stupid is smart. How smart is that if I'm only on the backside of intelligence? The moment comes, I'm an idiot. Afterwards, I know how to be. And I think that's the proof that I'm intelligent. And people spend their whole lives like that, won't they? Corralling themselves, going in conflict about what they just did and how they could have done it better. And next time they'll know differently. And then the next time comes and they're still not in the driver's seat. Something else is. And that's what we're going to talk about. We have so much to cover today. I actually don't even know. Sometimes I look at the plate that we're about to dine from. And it just, there's just so much you'd rather look at it than eat it. But we have to do both. And where we begin is important. So I want to present an overview of something, one idea. And that idea is that what we're going to look at, both in terms of the exposition that I'm going to offer, as well as the study of the diagram that's on this board in front of us, there's absolutely nothing new in it at all. Even though you may have never in your life heard what you're going to hear. Whatever a man discovers, whatever a woman uncovers spiritually, is not a creation of theirs. It's a revelation of theirs. And the difference between a revelation and a creation is that the individual who believes he creates the truth is lost to himself. Such a man, such a woman is deceived, and you best be careful of people who tell you that they are the creator of principle, that they are the ones you should follow and otherwise be interested in, because they are bringing into the universe that which only they can bring. All these things are lies and dangers. The truth is that every human being, every single one of us, is a creation intended for revelation. And there's an immense difference between understanding that I'm a creature who is a creation intended for revelation, and listen, because it's right to the heart of the talk, and that revelation and creation are one thing in God's creature. They're one thing. They're not separate things. There is no revelation apart from creation. None exists, because it is creation in which revelation is revealed. And we are the book. That's what we're made of and from and for in the long run. But at present, We're nothing like that at all. At present, we are the Dr. Frankensteins and Frankensteinesses of the world, because our creations are all the time collapsing in front of us, and then instead of realizing that what we have created to give ourselves comfort and contentment, that these things, instead of letting them prove themselves to be what they are, we simply redesign them. We put another zipper, for those of you who are into trivia, Frankenstein trivia. He had a zipper. Remember, he had a zipper? At least Peter Boyle did in Young Frankenstein. Moving the zipper is not the same as a pair of spiritual pants. How's that? Oh, for heaven's sakes, lighten up, will you? You are the stiffest group of human beings. God. Okay, what does that mean? You know, fun doesn't mean anything. Which is shocking, isn't it? And to finalize that point, back to the seriousness of it, what I'm going to show you lives in you. If you don't see it there, if it doesn't become your own discovery, then what I have said to you isn't real. But that supposes that you're going to do the uncovering work. Because if you say that what I've said isn't real, and then you don't do the digging, you don't do the work in the garden, then you're a hypocrite and a liar and a cynic. You're someone who would rather profess to know the truth while never doing anything to prove to yourself what you know is true or not. And such are the hypocrites and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and all the people on this planet who would rather point a finger and castigate people who are interested in finding Christ, finding light, finding truth, than do the actual work themselves interiorly to find out if such a life exists. And don't be one of those people, because they're goners. They're doomed. They will have only their life over and over and over again in a descending curve. That's how it works. We can be different, and we're going to be. And we're going to do what we need to do. We're going to look at life. We're going to try it the best we can. And nobody, is there an Einstein in the room? How about a Feinstein? No Einsteins in here. The best there is an individual who is tired of repeating what is wrecking his life and the world that he lives in. That's the best that's in here, and that's good enough. Because such an individual is fired up. He's fueled by the understanding that he's been a fool. See, fools defend fools. But a true fool, someone who's seen he's been fooled by his own reactions, the relationships that he thought would relieve him of his pain and sorrow, that at such points where those things come to an end, that person stands there and he's no longer a fool being fooled by himself. He's a fool who is now fired up by bringing an end to his own foolishness. When I was a child, I spake as a child. So, what I want to talk about, now that we've set the ground, can be summarized in a certain way, simply. And that there is what we'll call the joy, the beauty, the pleasure, the goodness of a creative life. And then there is the antithesis of that, which is the pain and the constriction of a life in which conflict dominates. These are the two paths. We'll talk about that later in this talk. You've all heard of that idea, the path less traveled. Well, I'm going to give you the true definition of the path less traveled. But for now, we're going to look at it as an idea of what one has if they have a creative life. Now, what is a creative life? Now, we have to do a little work here. So take a deep breath. There's going to be a number of things we have to do. Do any of you remember when you were young? I'm not being facetious. Sometimes I say that funny, but I'm not trying to be facetious now. Do you remember how much you wanted to get out to the playground, for instance? And was anybody here, and so I know some of us probably were, but most of us weren't the guy choosing the people on the team. We were the one hoping not to be last chosen. Remember that? Creative life. Creative life means that that life is always new. That's what a creative life is. It's always new. How many of you draw, sculpt, take pictures, like to think about things, to understand things, like to take walks in nature? I mean, it doesn't matter what one thinks about necessarily, but when you think about what I'm talking of is the creative life, you're talking about a person who is in life. They're exploring it. They're interested in it. They're uncovering. They're digging. They're looking for relationship. Creative life. And such a person who has that creative life is consistently renewed by not just the things that he or she does, but the energies and the principles that bring them to do those things. Because life comes in and life wants expression, and life is found in expression through the world around a person, and they're in exchange. That's another definition of a creative life. A life in exchange with life, wherein life brings certain things, one works with what's given, one is changed by what one works with, one has a new form, and the whole process starts again. Creativity. Creativity. See, we've lost it. You have lost it. Because it isn't meant to be something that you do in your studio, if you even do that. It isn't meant for the 30-minute walk once a week. It's something else altogether. And to understand what that something else altogether is, we have to look at the flip side, which is not this creative life that we're talking about, but this conflicted life that we're talking about. Now, what is a conflicted life? How many of you could pretty much raise your hand? A conflicted life. Why does he have to be like that? How come that went the way it did? Why did the government do this? Why is the economy over there? Why isn't the tree bearing more fruit? And when it does bear fruit, why do the dang crows come and take it? You have your conflicts, I have mine. How come she said that? How come she said that to me? How could those people talk about me behind my back the way they do? How come I didn't go when I was 17? I could have gone that way and I went that way. How come my family is like they are? You fill in the blanks. And when we talk about a conflicted life, we're talking about a life what? That a person doesn't want. Two paths. One in which one isn't necessarily saying, I want this, but one is participating in what life wants, which is the fulfillment and the satisfaction and the transformation of the individual involved in it. And the other side, what? The me that doesn't want anything. At least 50% of the time, we've talked about that. How many of you know? At least half the time, you don't want to be happening what's happening. Well, that's creative, isn't it? Now, what is the nature, the underpinning principle beneath this conflicted life? This life that is, what shall we say? We'll use different words. When you're in conflict, when you don't want things, are you open and joyous or are you closed and dark? Which is it? Closed and dark. No, I don't want it. When you don't want something, that's the same as what? Resisting. That's the same as resistance. And when we talk about resistance, oh, come on now. We have to look at our lives, what we said a few minutes ago. When you were young, do you remember that you, how many of you liked anybody when you were young? Remember you had a boyfriend or a girlfriend, you especially like the early, you know, out of the gate, you still have high hopes, don't you? High hopes. High apple pie in the sky hopes. And do you remember that it was a real battlefield? Because you wanted to ask her out or you hoped that he would take you someplace or whatever it was. But even while all that was going on, you know, there was, do I look good enough? Is this the right time? Is it going to work out? So that there was always opposing forces in any of these early relationships. Or maybe you wanted to be a football player or you wanted to run track or whatever it was. And you knew you weren't quite as good as everybody else. Or if you were as good, you thought to yourself, I could be the best. Doesn't matter what we're talking about. Or you had a... you had an interest in an art or a craft as a young person. Here's the point that I'm trying to get across. When we were young, resistance to life was outweighed by our love for it and hope in it. How many, a critical point, I can't go past until you see that. How many of you see the fact of that? When you're young, you're not thinking to yourself, I mean, what I don't want to do and what I hope doesn't happen is way in the background as for the most part. Because you take a kid that thinks he puts a Superman cape on his back and he thinks he can fly. He knows he can fly. In his heart, you know, he knows he can fly. Now, sure, he doesn't want to try to jump. Because he already knows he's really not going to fly. But he jumps anyway. Why? For the love of the idea of flying. You find your own examples. But the point is, and it's critical for you to work along with me, is to see that, you know, when we're young, the things that stand in our way, the things that are that we feel resistance toward, the resistance was secondary when we were young because we had aspiration. We had inspiration. When you were young, before you got out into the world and found out what it was like or got beat down by it, however it happened, you thought, wasn't there, you watch out world, I'm coming through? Even though you knew there was going to be some kind of struggle, you saw what a mess mom and dad had become. But they were going to give you the benefit of their knowledge and you were a different creature. How many of you knew you were different than your parents? And you knew you could do it. And what happens to that? That's the question. What happened to that heart whose love, whose desire, because it wasn't real love, whose wish to participate in a broader picture, what happened to that heart that went before the resistance, that has now become a self that is resistant bound and heart takes second place to it? What has happened to it? Now, how many of you understand what I'm asking you? This is such an important question because what we can see is that there was a point in our lives where we didn't think to ourselves about what we couldn't do and what wouldn't happen. But over time, which is the key issue here, over time, a reversal took place. And we began to fear more than to think of fulfillment. And we began to try to protect what we did acquire rather than perfect the possibility of becoming a new creature again and living refreshed and renewed by our activity in a creative process that brought us those things. See, doesn't it? I don't know how a man or a woman can go through this life satisfied with not wanting to suffer. Because that's what we do. Satisfied with not wanting to suffer. Listen to me. Trying to find a new pleasure is not wanting to suffer. Another plan is not wanting to suffer. It isn't the happiness that it seems to be, because you wouldn't be seeking the things you were seeking if the seed of them weren't the sorrow. And how does a person come to live like that? What's happened to mankind? What's happened to womankind? And I'll tell you what's happened to us. We got deceived. We took the wrong road, the wrong path. And the correction, that which brings what we're looking for, has to do with finding that we've taken the wrong path, which is the hardest thing to do. You know, when you build a mansion on the wrong path, you're not about to say to yourself, I'm going to go build another house. Resistance to life takes the joy out of it. Resistance to relationships, no matter what they are, between one's own thought, things, or relationships with others, steals everything that's sweet out of it. Because the resistance to life, to relationship, the resistance to the moment, the resistance to listening to the speaker. How many of you have resistance getting out of bed sometimes? Just to get, gotta get up. Don't want to get up. It drains everything beautiful and vital out of life. And such resistance is not a part of natural creativity. but is itself a creature of an unnatural creation that is particular to man, particular to woman. And that's what we're going to look at. Did any of you ever run track or throw a football or swim or do anything like that? Even at the simplest level, do you understand that in the creative process, I'm going to build another muscle? That in order to build a muscle, there has to be resistance. You can't build a muscle without resistance. You can't grow a tree without resistance. You can't have grass. You can't have anything in creation without resistance as a part of its creation. It's impossible. Resistance is not the negative word that you think it is. Because what we think of now, when we think of resistance, if I say, think of resistance, and if you, it doesn't take much, does it? Yeah, I gotta think. Talk about resistance. I gotta think about resistance. And I resist that. Do you see? So it doesn't matter what you say when you talk about resistance. Human beings have been conditioned to hate resistance. Look, how many of you think to yourself, boy, I really don't want to go cut the lawn, and I really love the feeling of not wanting to go cut the lawn. When you think of something that you have to do that you don't want to do, is it a joyous, creative, open moment? Or is it a moment in which every part of you is looking at what you have to do or think you have to do, and as you think about it and you feel the resistance, you hate the fact that you have to do that and you can't stand the feeling of the resistance inside of you? Yes or no? Yes. So we're going to do something that maybe has never been done on the earth before, even though it's not new. We're going to take it apart. We're going to give at least the opportunity to your mind and heart, if you'll listen and be open to what's being said, to never again for the rest of your life meet resistance of any form in the same way you've met it before. Think for a minute. How many of you know how different life could be if you didn't have resistance to it? You know, for instance, a resentment. How many of you carry a resentment? And you might as well all raise your hand. Did you know that a person who carries a resentment around in his or her mind is carrying around an image that was constructed by their own mind of the person, filled with the content of that experience, and then they spend their life resisting their own thought? We're going to dismantle resistance. Which means if you're willing to listen and try to understand, there will never be a moment in your life hereafter where you won't have a new tool in your consciousness by which to begin to meet the moments where resistance comes in, that you can't change the moment for what you understand. Because why? Because instead of calling on the you that hates the moment, you're going to call on the love of the understanding of it. Don't you see how different that would be just in itself? Take deep breaths. This is deep and there's quite a spirit. You're going to have to stay awake if you're going to get this. So let's talk about resistance, first of all. This may be a shock to you, because when you think of resistance, you think of negativity. But there is resistance that is part of a cosmic character. Resistance is inherent in creation. Resistance is inherent in creation. A common glimpse realizes when we look at it that there is always in this universe a set of opposites, active and passive forces. And active and passive forces, when they come together, create, just by the fact that they've come together, resistance to one another, positive and negative. What happens when you put positive and negative together? When you bring any opposites together, there is an instantaneous moment of resistance. Did you know this? I saw this on TV maybe a month or two ago. That when you pick up something, do you know you're not feeling the object? You're feeling your resistance to it. Because the electrons that make up the fingers, sorry kids, they're not yours, they oppose and resist the electrons in this object because it's different matter. And it is the actual resistance and the friction that produces the sensation that you call you picking something up. That's cool, isn't it? But when you think about it, It means that I'm always experiencing a magnetic field. The relationship between fields is my experience, isn't it? Now, we don't think like that, do we? We go, I hate that thing. Look at the color of it. And I don't like the way it feels. So resistance, now let's go slow because we're going to start talking about the diagram up here. And if you're listening to this tape, if it makes it into a tape or a CD, you will have, if you were the original buyer, you will have a diagram on a sheet to work with. So we're going to look here on the left-hand side. And we'll see the word 1, 2, 3, disturbance, impact, and resistance. And underneath it, we see the word new creation, all natural action under celestial law. This is happening all the time. Disturbance meaning movement. You know, just because we can't see things moving doesn't mean they're not moving. We live in a sea of forces, a sea of different qualities of energies. We live in it. It's God's life. And it is perfect, constant flux. But part of that constant flux that we're going to call the disturbance movement is that that constant flux, that constant movement is constantly interacting with stuff. Just like someone walks up to you and says something. Does anybody ever walk up to you and say something and you were like the billiard ball spin off into the corner pocket? But on your way to the corner pocket, you hit three other balls. You know what I'm talking about. Movement. And where there's movement of an energetic quality, there are those energies that will be struck by those movements because they are either similar or dissimilar qualities. And when they are struck, there is what we're going to call impact. And this is all unconscious to the human being, by the way. Because, why? Because it's in nature.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Oh, there's so much to talk about in so little time. I want to tell you about trees and oxygen and chloroform and stuff like that, but I can't. Because it's, if you look at life, here's sunlight. I got to do it. What am I going to do? Sunlight streams down, fills this tree, active force hits the leaf. Now, did you know that trees, during the day breathe carbon dioxide? Thank God for trees. That's what they do. They're sitting there and taking carbon dioxide in. But the energy from the sun, it comes in and it causes a catalytic process to take place. And that CO2, that carbon dioxide, is turned into oxygen that it breathes out at night and a certain kind of carbon. So CO2 is turned into oxygen and carbon. And then that carbon becomes the basis of cellular life inside of that tree that splits and then you get a piece of fruit. Isn't that fantastic? Oh, see, it is. But see, you look at it. Dang tree, the branches are too big. darn it, winter, I got to cut them back over now. This is our life. No beauty, no creative relationship in understanding the principles, pushing everything away because it interferes with our pleasure, which is what? I want to sit on a sofa and eat a pizza. Darn pizza, it's not made right. Yes or no? Here's this fantastic process taking place. Perfect creativity. And to the point, all of that interaction between active and passive forces is brought into existence back here at that moment of impact, and what we're going to call registration inside of ourselves, which we're going to get to. But there's impact, and that resistance that takes place is the first reaction. That resistance that takes place has to do with everything under the law of construction, deconstruction, and reconstruction. Birth, death, rebirth. Matter taken apart, matter reformed. All of that is in this natural cycle, and we can see it's in this natural cycle because there it is. We can look and see in the common, the celestial principle, that everything is in a constant state of flux, a state of creative flux, produced by active forces, interacting with passive forces, and then those forces producing a resistance by their very touching that is reconciled. Sun hits the earth. Earth takes that energy, Mother Nature reconciles it, produces the tree. Active, passive, modifying. Something takes the forces when they meet and produces out of them something that is greater than the force themselves. Do you see what I'm saying? Because if it was just that, you wouldn't have creation. You just have a bunch of forces. You'd have a cosmic chaotic soup, which does exist and we're in it. But part of the creation of that is this manifestation of our physical existence, our forms and the activity of them. But they all begin with and have their place in this beautiful creative life. God's life. God's life. Call it what you will. This extraordinary intelligence that is reflected in this present moment, the now. And the now is the converging point relative to the being sentient in it, where we see for ourselves the expression of these forces if we were looking. But we don't see them. And the reason we don't see them is because, now we're going to go to the other side of the diagram. We don't see them because in the moment where these energies come into us, a relationship takes place, someone says something to us. And I better slow down a little bit and say this. Do you ever ask yourself, why did someone say that to me? Now, is that question, why did someone say that to me? I know you're not asking, why did they flatter me?
Right.
You know, if someone flatters you, you'll... Yeah. But of course. Someone says something to you don't like. We'll use the words and their expression, their negativity, as a force. An active force. It has to hit something in you for you not to like it. Doesn't it? Now the passage of that thought, the passage of that energy from that man to that woman, and that woman's what? There is a disturbance. There's a movement. He says something. There's a registration of it, an impact. And at the moment of that, there is a natural. Do you remember that I said that? There's a natural resistance. And that natural resistance is part of a creative force that in the world that we see in nature, nature herself takes that active resistance and produces a new form or destroys a form in order to keep the process of creativity going. Everybody following this? Now, so here's on this side of the board, natural law, where nature reconciles these positive and negative forces for the purpose of strengthening, for the strength of improving, perfecting the forms that are the manifestation of the expression of these forces. We can see that. Hopefully you can see that. That's perfect. You know what a nice place Earth would be if we weren't on it. I can see that you're not. Let me, I'll try this for you. Has anybody ever reached out to touch you in a loving way, and it irritated the bejeebies out of you? Yes or no?
Yes.
Well, is it the touch that's irritating? Or is it what was touched that's irritated? I mean, the loving touch can't be irritating in itself. Someone, you know, sweetheart. So it isn't, you want to separate what's touching you from being touchy. And what is it that's touchy? It can't be because of a loving pat. It has to do with something that's particular inside of the individual in the moment that resists that, not because of what that is, but because of what the person is telling himself is happening. So now we're going to talk about the right side of the board, what we're calling sleeping humanity. Where, here's this natural resistance, okay, there's a movement, someone says something, or I just get up in the morning and I look out and here's, I can feel a certain resistance. Here, I just wish I could get this to you. Just because one feels resistance does not mean that one has to have a negative reaction to it. And that's what we do. The moment that any form of resistance comes into us, it is immediately swallowed up by the second reaction, which is the resistance resisted. Follow the board up there. Instantaneous for human beings, because it's become literally a pathway in the psychopathology of their brain. Negative states become a pathway in the brain. Where after a certain point, doesn't matter, how many of you know people like this? You say hi, no. Don't you? How many of you know you're verging on that? Because we are. The whole world is verging on that. Nice day, isn't it? Yeah. How do you feel today? What do you want? And if we don't speak it, it isn't because it isn't there, is it? So here's this, what we're calling the second reaction. The initial reaction, the resistance, is a purely atomic, if you will, a purely physical, natural expression that is part of a creative life. Part of a creative life. A man wants to be an artist. He realizes he runs into the limit of his capacity. His capacity resists going beyond itself because it is what it is. But the love of what he wants to do takes him through the resistance. And you have a creative cycle. You have a beautiful spiral of light. You have God as he intended human beings to be, which is being perfected by the light, the love of understanding, instead of being made sicker and sicker and sicker by this second reaction. And the second reaction is what? The second reaction that we're talking about, when life, here comes some resistance, somebody says, would you run and get that for me? Instantaneous what? The resistance is registered, yes? So here's a moment, a movement, a disturbance comes in, there's an impact, some registration, a natural resistance, and in that second, that natural resistance is turned into a rejection. How? How does that happen? You see, you have to ask yourself, what we're looking at, what is it inside of us that rejects life? That's what we're looking at. What is it that us that rejects the moment, the person, no matter who they are, by the way, no matter what they are, what is it us that rejects it and becomes negative over it? We're talking about this second reaction in which there's a natural resistance. It belongs there because it's part of the pathway of this further reconciliation. But take a deep breath. I know I'm throwing a lot at you. See, in nature, Mother Nature herself does this reconciliation. But in humanity, in mankind, in womankind, Mother Nature is not intended to be the reconciling force. We grow because of the reconciliation, physically, but spiritually, nature is not the reconciling force. Spiritually, the light is the reconciling force. Awareness, Christ is the reconciling force, the modifying force. Without that, what do we call on in the moment? What do you call on in the moment where something happens to you? And in comes this first wave of resistance. And one day you'll see this. You know, the first movement of resistance doesn't have a quality or a character to it assigned at all. Just like in nature. Imagine a tree. I'm not going to grow a leaf. Are you kidding me? Forget you, son. I'm resting today. This is my day of rest. I made an apple yesterday. No more apples. You honestly, you think I'm kidding? See, if trees, if bees, birds could do that, if they had that moment of natural resistance that is the part of the process of creativity, they'd just shut down. The ocean goes on strike. No more waves. Human beings, when that moment of resistance comes, something in us captures it. Something in us, now listen, takes that necessary and natural force of creative perfecting in us and turns it into uncreativity, turns it into unproductivity, turns it into pain, turns it into suffering. That's what it does. Because in the minute of it, here's this resistance, and then something in us will seize it. This is what we're calling the resistance resisted. There's the natural resistance, and now something in me leaps up and resists that initial resistance. And it does by how? Have you ever had this thought as an example? Someone says, will you go with me somewhere? And you don't even know why you don't want to go. There's just an initial resistance, and then comes the second reaction by which you reap, you go into imagination and you think, you know, it's going to be a lot better to be where I am, not where you are. That's what's going to be better today. Another example, a person walks up and says something to you, and maybe it's unkind, and there's an initial reaction, this initial resistance, and a split second later there's the complete rejection of it. Why? Because now your mind is telling you that that person has had it in for you for the last 20 years, and they've just been waiting to drop that bomb on you. So, initial resistance taken by second reaction. Taken by second reaction. And the reaction is always based on something inside of us being able to call up something from our past. Some content of our mind that was connected to a pain or a sorrow or other negative states that is instantaneously accessed by thought as it goes through its divided pathway and finds all of the justification. Because if you look under rejection of that reaction, that second reaction, you'll see it's justified. That's where blame comes in. That's where resistance and the refusal of a moment comes in. How many of you know, we laughed at it, instantaneous denial. What do you want to do today? If it's not giving me something that I want, nothing. Instantaneous denial. And when we deny, and have you ever done this? Have you ever asked somebody, say, well, why don't you want to? Because I don't. Yes or no? Don't ask. It's enough that I don't want to. And the person doesn't have a reason why. But they're saying that to gain the few seconds they need for the mind to leap into all of the reasons why they can justify the negative response. Can't you see this in yourself? So in that moment of that rejection of that initial resistance, that second reaction, all of the justification, the blame, the denial, and then you'll see the next step is under B, is the redirection. Because as soon as I have refused life, soon as I've thrown it away, denied it, then I'm left with a natural, literally natural unhappiness. You can't refuse life and be happy, folks. It's impossible. But that opposite, now there's an opposite. Try to see it. First there's this, I push it away. Now I'm over here with what I don't want. But now I have to have something to want. And so now I find things to do. I redirect my own life. I come up with the plan that's not your plan, but that's better than your plan. I come up with the new process that I'm going to go through by which I won't. How about this? Have you ever really done something hurtful to yourself or someone else? And as soon as you were done with it, having been taken over by this second reaction, and there's another thing I want to say. In the midst of the second reaction, there is no one there by your name having that. It doesn't belong to you. It's born out of a mechanical process taking place inside of the mind. This is a key idea. Second reaction, that which resistance is, when it resists the initial part, it's a blind force. It's an anti-life. It's an anti-life. It's an anti-force. It does nothing except obstruct. It does nothing except restrain. That is its only power. But for the self that has become its opposite, there's nothing he can do. He's taken over. How many of you ever realize after you've been taken over that you got taken over? How many of you, after you're taken over, then can explain to yourself how you got taken over? Raise your hands. Because he's an idiot. Because the world went left instead of right. That's what this part B represents. The redirection. Where the part of me that got taken over now will justify and explain to itself what happened to it so that it feels as though it never lost its life in the first place. In other words, I'm still in control. Got it? That's redirection. When you take those two things together, the initial resistance that's natural, that's stolen by the mind divided in itself, that imagines and finds ways to justify that negative second reaction. I want to put this in. That's where negativity is incorporated into your life and on this planet. If it were not for this second reaction, for the resistance resisted, if it were not for that, negative forces could not be embodied on this planet. There would be no war. There would be no hatred. There would be none of the conditions that exist on the planet as they do were it not for this surreptitious self, this flesh, this nature that we're talking about that resists the initial resistance. Because in order to resist the initial resistance, it must have a justification, and the justification is created by separation, being apart from the people and the places and the possessions that had I had these things or in control of them, if you worshipped as I worshipped or whatever it is that one says, then we would be at peace. But that nature exists by division. It exists through resisting. Hope you're following this. So we have this rejection, the rejection of this initial necessary natural resistance that's part of the creative process. Then we have the redirection we're talking about. And when you have that, that resistance and then that redirection, what do you have? You have the circle of self. You have a nature that is a captive of its own negative reactions because nothing comes into that circle save what is introduced through it by the self justifying itself under all circumstances. Listen to me. If you're having trouble following it, you get this. You get the tape. I tell you, you will never do anything better with your time than to understand the principles that I'm explaining. Intellectually, it's challenging because our mind can't quite see the whole picture. But inwardly, there is nothing more valuable for a person to do than to understand. Well, I'll ask you, have you ever been a victim of your own thinking? How can a person be a victim of their own thinking? How is that possible? Because the person has become a victim of this second reaction, this second nature, which is not your true nature at all. And when they get caught in that circle of self and sorrow, we're calling that all part of a dark and unconscious mechanical life, why the world is the way it is and why it's going downward. Now we're going to talk about the path less taken. We have 8 minutes to go. Take a deep breath. The path less taken. What is the path less taken? The path less taken represents, now listen, not the continuity of this self that protects and preserves itself by meeting moments with what it remembers about them so it can resist or embrace them accordingly. But the path less taken is the path of true creativity, God's life, which is perfect participation in the light, in the creative life. Perfect participation. I'm going to put this in, even though I don't have time to explain it. Man is made in the image of God. Do you think God looks like you? Maybe on a good day? Man is made in the image of God means that man is made a perfect microcosm of the beautiful universe, both created and uncreated, in which all of these forces are in play. All of them opposing, resisting, and being reconciled for the further perfection of those things through the light that enters into them. That's Christ's life. That's the true life. Interjected, brought into it, and a person is meant to live that life. That is the creative life. That is the path less taken. Where, now listen, in the moment of the initial resistance, the natural resistance, that person remembers, begins to wish and work at being able to look at their life apart from the second reaction. In other words, that individual realizes because they've been seated, and you're being seated here, whether you know it or not, with the truth. This knowledge is not mine. It's been handed down by a circle of human beings who have themselves been reborn, been brought to real life. And those principles handed down so that people like ourselves one day could look and see our lives through those ideas and begin to make the meaningful changes in the way we see and think, as opposed to trying to change what we see and think to make meaning in our lives. And there's a vast difference between the two. So here's this moment in which someone's walking up to me. Have you ever had someone just walk up to you, and before they even spoke, you were giving the go away. You didn't want them because how could a person, they might be bringing you a check for $1 million? Nah. And then they're walking up to you, and as they're walking up, you don't want them. How can you not want them? Because the initial resistance, the movement, strikes something, moves something, and instantaneously second reaction takes place, and now you're identified with, that person's always bugging me. The past becomes the perpetrator, doesn't it? It furthers its own possibilities in order to keep that self in place. But we're talking about this moment now where instead of this sleeping humanity, we're talking about what it means to wake up. And in this instance, we remember the truth of ourselves. Now, don't make that complicated. That doesn't mean you sit and think to yourself, I'm this or God is that or one or whatever. Nothing like that. Remember the truth of yourself means you bring yourself into the moment where the truth itself is asking to be expressed through you. God's life, the wisdom of this universe, is trying to express itself through us. Where else would it be expressing itself? It's trying, I know this is stunning, to know itself through us, and it is further perfecting itself through us if we are participating in the creative process of that light interacting with the darkness. That's our life, our real life. So in that moment, rather than the second reaction, going and becoming identified with those thoughts and feelings that justify the negative state, which is the negative incorporation, we remember the truth of ourselves, and the whole point of the talk is we do the difficult task of releasing the second reaction. Look at the board. I can feel the negativity. I can feel the antithesis of creativity taking place. I feel conflict entering into me. I don't want this. I wish he wouldn't that. You name it. In that moment I come, that there it is, impact, boom, okay. Whew. Okay, I have a choice, and for the first time in my life I'm going to make the right choice. I'm not going to follow that train of negative associations that justifies the ache that I have by blaming you for it, not doing it. Instead, I'm going to release the second reaction, which means what? It means I have to enter into the light within me that has revealed that second reaction. I have to become attentive to my own awareness instead of allowing my attention to be stolen by that which blocks and kills awareness, which is thought about self. This is what the true meaning of conscious suffering is. To drop the second reaction is to drop yourself. To drop the second reaction is to deliberately drop what is not yourself, but that has been calling itself, and that you have been calling yourself for since human beings walked this planet. Because in the moment of dropping that second reaction and becoming, listen, a conscious participant in what? In the original movement. The active and passive and reconciling force. Only now the reconciling force is one that we have chosen to embody. You must choose the light. You must choose Christ. You must choose truth. You must choose the light. You have to use the words you want. The point I'm saying is that the way we are now, when those moments come, we do not choose in favor of suffering the actual, I don't know how to say this to you. Here's the problem. I want to make it positive. Meaning I want you to see how positive it is what I'm talking about. But you can't tell human beings in the present day who are fully conditioned to resist and resent anything that isn't part of driving through and eating something quickly that there's great beauty and strength and love and eternity wrapped up inside of the whole of your life as it's being given to you in this moment. But you must accept it as it is given. and you don't accept it as it is given. You refuse it as it is given because of what inside of you wants to give you what you say life is. And what you say life is isn't life, it is death. Because it belongs to that circle of self in which there's nothing but resistance to resistance, followed up by the explanation and the justification of it, and the furtherance, the continuity of that self that never existed in the first place. Never existed in the first place. The self that we walk around, do you think that the you that you think about who got hurt 2 years ago or who got a benefit 25 years ago, do you think that's you? The answer is that there inside of that mind is something that thinks it is that. And everything is weighed and measured against that, and all the measurements are the furtherance of this pathetic, pathological world in which human beings today would rather please themselves with ideas that are empty than to meet the emptiness of this path less taken in which everything is being perfected and fulfilled. But we can be different than that. Whole point of the talk, be different than that. To use that moment where you start to feel the negativity, and the negativity is a dead giveaway. As soon as you start to feel the negativity, you can, okay, whoa. I couldn't be negative like this were it not for that second reaction. I couldn't be trying to push this away and justifying it. I couldn't have that sense of myself as someone who's been wronged and who has to make it right. I couldn't have that were it not for the second reaction. And you drop the second reaction. You drop it. And I'll tell you what would happen. I have only a few seconds left. Not only would you be transformed because you allowed the light to reconcile these natural forces inside of you, so that you would participate in the grand life of the light, but the whole world would be changed instantaneously as well, because you can't separate this consciousness from the content that you see taking place around you. Learn to let go of the second reaction, and you'll find a new life.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.